Hello and welcome to the Compliance Week podcast. I'm Joe Mott, staff writer for Compliance Week. Ray Rice of the Baltimore Ravens attacked his fiancée in an elevator. Super Bowl champion Tom Brady is in a protracted battle over whether he did or didn't have game balls underinflated. The NFL has been in headlines in recent months for much more than what takes place on the field. From Deflategate to allegations of child abuse, child endangerment, domestic violence, and gun charges. You don't have to be a sports fan to take note, and business leaders might learn a thing or two, either what to do or what to avoid, from how the NFL conducted its internal investigations. In our latest podcast, we talked to Timothy McConnell, co-chair of the Labor and Employment Practice Group at the law firm Baker Donaldson, about the lessons to be had when conducting an effective and efficient investigation process. We asked McConnell about some of those very high-profile and controversial investigations by the NFL into conduct by its players. How might these compare to what a corporate internal investigation might entail?
They are certainly takeaways from how the NFL has handled these situations. And when you apply it in the corporate setting, I think while not every corporation is nearly as high profile from a public standpoint as the NFL, every corporation should take any investigation very seriously. If you're dealing, whether it's allegations involving harassment, discrimination, some sort of financial improprieties or unethical behavior, a company that does not take investigations seriously and take the steps to look into issues does so at its own peril. The NFL situation has played out in a very high profile way. Other companies could face a very similar situation through litigation, particularly this day and age when we are obviously a very litigious society. And with the 24-hour news cycle, they're always looking for something to put in the media.
Are there lessons to be gleaned from what the NFL did wrong, at least in the eyes of critics?
There are obviously a lot of critics out there who are quick to jump on things, but there are certain key takeaways I think that any company can apply from what the NFL did, particularly when you look at the Ray Rice situation. And when you compare that with Deflategate, you've got really two opposite ends of the spectrum. You have, I think what everyone agrees was a very less than thorough investigation involving the Ray Rice situation. And then when we come to footballs, whether they met the rule as far as how they were inflated, we have a 243-page report. So we're opposite ends of the spectrum in what the NFL did. But if you take the Ray Rice situation and move it into the corporate setting and what companies need to look at when they're doing an investigation, several things come to mind. One, take it seriously. Understand the moment that is before you. Understand how the situation could be scrutinized, particularly in a company setting through litigation. Investigations, particularly in the employment context or an SEC investigation, the company's internal investigations are always heavily, heavily scrutinized. And so understanding that before you go in and begin the process is enormously important. And that leads into another important point. When you select the person to do the investigation, select somebody who is experienced. You don't want a rookie going in and doing investigation. You want to make sure you've got an experienced investigator that understands how to ask questions, how to take detailed notes, how to gather all of the essential information so that the company can consider everything and make an appropriate decision on what to do. I think, when you look at the Ray Rice situation, I think one of the major questions that's come up is, why didn't you ask for the video? And that's a very obvious question. You want to look for and ask for key pieces of evidence, and you don't want to ignore it. It's going to come out at some point in time, and my preference as counsel for employers is, let's go ahead and find out what the facts are, good or bad, so that we can figure out how to deal with the situation.
Throughout these and other NFL investigations, there were plenty of leaks to the media and otherwise. Can companies learn from that, and what steps can be taken to ensure the confidentiality of those investigations?
That's always a challenge and a concern about maintaining confidentiality, because it's important to maintain the integrity of the process. As far as how companies can handle that, first and foremost, you want to have a small circle of people involved in what's going on, as small as you can, basically those who need to know. The more people you involve, the greater the chance that something will get leaked. And during the course of the investigation, you want to express to the people that are being interviewed the confidential nature of the process. There's some of our regulatory agencies challenge that requirement, but I'm a firm believer in that confidentiality is essential to all investigations. It helps ensure the integrity of the process. It helps ensure that you're getting what I call clean information, not information that's been discussed and filtered amongst several people. That you're getting information straight from the employee and getting it in a cleaner fashion than if they had discussed and matched up testimony with other witnesses involved in the investigation. So in stressing that, to each person you speak with, and then keeping your circle small, I think that will help with the confidentiality concerns.
Is an internal investigation an opportunity to encourage whistleblowers? In Deflategate, it appears the NFL was all too happy to give up the source of the initial tip.
Generally, it will be anonymous. A lot of the companies, particularly if you get into the publicly traded realm, are using hotline complaints where the employees have the option of making complaints on an anonymous basis. As far as whether it encourages whistleblowers, I think any company who does not take an investigation seriously, who chooses to ignore or has a concern that, well, if we look into this, we're going to encourage others, you do so at your own peril. We are certainly in a day and age where the regulatory agencies are very active. And I have found over the course of my career that those companies who have ignored situations or for whatever reason have not moved forward and completed an investigation, it will come back to bite at some point in time. In contrast, those who are very proactive and take it seriously and involve the resources and the time to look into concerns that are being brought to their attention tend to head off litigation much sooner. It sends a message, I think, both to the whistleblower or whoever's making the complaint and to everyone in the organization that the company does take concerns very, very seriously. That's an important part of an overall compliance program. Having a policy or a compliance policy is one step. If it's not being enforced consistently through the investigative process, it's just a piece of paper at the end of the day.
We asked McConnell about Deflategate and whether or not it reinforces the old adage that it's not the crime, it's the cover-up.
You're touching upon human nature in that situation. Unfortunately, if you're not being completely forthright, you've got to continue to play that out, hoping that it never comes to light. I said earlier, when I'm asked to do internal investigations for companies, I want to know good and bad. So if there are bad facts that we need to know, it's essential to how we assess the situation. If I find people who aren't being cooperative, it certainly raises questions. If they will not turn over certain pieces of evidence, whether it's emails or texts or whatever it may be, it's human nature to automatically question why. Because if they are completely innocent in the process, I think most people would agree they'd be free to share anything and everything to demonstrate that fact.
What about punishment? Tom Brady, prior to his appeal, received a harsher penalty than Rice did with an on-video domestic violence incident. What's the best way for a company to decide what an employee's punishment should be? Who should have final say? Compliance? Counsel? Executives?
The NFL situation brings to mind the word perspective and trying to maintain perspective on things when you measure the two situations. But from a company standpoint, when they're making a decision, if we've concluded that our findings warrant some sort of disciplinary action, I think it is important to have more than one individual involved to look at historically, have we had similar situations similar to this one, so that we're consistent in how we're handling them. Obviously, discipline's going to vary greatly depending on the offense. If you've got sexual harassment going on, you're likely going to terminate an individual's employment. Something less, it just depends on how we've handled it in the past. But we certainly, being consistent is very, very important. And at the end of the day, you get through the investigative process, you want to make sure that we've addressed the issues and that we're taking steps to make sure it doesn't happen again. Whatever the conduct or behavior has been, our goal out of this is to make sure that we correct it and it doesn't happen going forward.
The NFL says it couldn't get Brady to turn over his text messages. This might not be an issue for an employee with a company-issued phone, but does BYOD complicate matters? How can a company get private messages that might live on the private property of an employee?
An employee's own personal phone does complicate it tremendously. Again, if it's a company-provided phone or if the company is actually paying the bill on it, I think the company's going to have a right to access information. But if you're dealing with a purely personal phone, the individual's paying for their own phone, short of being able to subpoena information, the companies are going to have to rely on the employee cooperating and can make the ask and see if the employee will voluntarily provide the phone, provide text messages or emails that may be off the server or outside the company's system. The great challenge with text messages is they generally do not retained for a very long time. And so if you're going much beyond 30 days on text messages, it may be difficult to get those. But texting, as we've seen, is obviously very prevalent and it's made its way into the workplace. I deal with more and more situations where management employees are texting, which seems to be a very personal way of communicating. But that line seems to be crossed and become much more common.
You've been listening to the Compliance Week podcast in an interview with Timothy McConnell, co-chair of the Labor and Employment Practice Group at the law firm Baker Donaldson. He spoke to us about conducting an effective investigation and what companies can learn from highly publicized disciplinary actions by the NFL. I'm Joe Mott, staff writer for Compliance Week. Thank you for listening.